back.
Nice to see you. Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning. And I'll have Marshall introduce the panel start, please. Thank you.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Sleater, Judge Bratfold, Judge Cochran, the Honorable Randall J. Sleater presiding.
And welcome once again to the Court of Appeals, the virtual Court of Appeals on September 15. This is the first of two oral hearings we have today, and then we have three non-oral hearings that we'll be considering along with these two thereafter. As counsel know, because we've already had some glitches, things can happen, and so the marshals know that you'll see the time in my box. It's the upper left, but it may be somewhere different for you. Hopefully you can see it clearly. If any time you cannot, do let us know and we'll try to assist you in that regard. But also, if we lose you either orally or visually, or worse yet, both, like we did, we'll instruct the marshal to stop the clock. We'll try to resurrect the time when you're back on. And so otherwise, everything should be pretty much what you are otherwise perhaps used to. You'll each have 15 minutes with 5 minutes of rebuttal if appellant so chooses, counsel for appellant. We do ask that you identify your full name for our record, because we are recording these proceedings per usual process. It is beneficial if you mute yourself while the other counsel is talking, and you'll notice that we'll do that as judges as well. It seems to have some assistance on the technology. And so what I'll do first is note for the record, this first case is the State of Minnesota versus Kenneth Clifford Cordes, our file number A20-0694. And counsel for appellant, when you're ready, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Rob, R-O-B-B, two B's like my mom spelled it, Lee Olson with an O-N. I represent the Denmark Township in this matter. I'm serving as a special prosecutor. I don't normally do work for them, but I was hired for this ordinance matter. I am seated as the members of the court, because the way my room is constructed, I don't really have the ability to do a podium. So no disrespect intended.
None taken. We understand that. That's been more the norm than the exception. So that's fine.
Okay. And you won't hold it against me that I have a country music poster on my wall either. So in any event.
Can you identify who's on the poster?
Yes, Dwight Yoakam.
Very good.
Yeah. Anyways, the township appeals the trial court's order here, and it's Judge John Hoffman out of Washington County, dismissing a criminal complaint under Rule 11 for lack of probable cause. The state, as we laid out our argument, contends that this was based on an incorrect legal determination. Second was that the trial court failed to consider discontinued use of the property. Third, that the trial court used the wrong standard in applying Florence. It's kind of like the criminal equivalent of summary judgment. And then finally, that the trial court improperly dismissed the claim or the complaint here with prejudice, without allowing the state the ability to refile if it had other facts to add. The factual background, and I laid that out, but just in briefly, is that Mr. Cordes here purchased 147 acres back in 1977. That property was zoned agricultural. By 2017, I believe the events here were in 2018 that we're talking about, he only owned 20 acres. He'd sold off the rest. And by then, what was left was zoned rural residential. The Denmark Township Ordinance that was in effect in 2017 and still in effect today prohibited trucking on rural residential properties. The Washington County Ordinance in effect back in 1977 also prohibited operation of a trucking business on that property.
Counsel, I have a question for you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is trucking defined in the code?
Yes, it is. And kind of anticipated that, that trucking, it says transportation terminal, and I'm citing from the Denmark Township Development Code. That's the, it's document ID 17, contested omnibus hearing, exhibit four.
And on, and that definition has been consistent during the relevant time period?
Yes, that it says transportation terminal is a truck terminal and storage area. And here they were, you know, where the allegation is, and I guess it's not disputed that there's a fairly substantial dump truck business that's taking place on the property. The testimony at the hearing showed that there were between 11 and 14 trucks at any given time on that property.
Mr. Olson, you started out by referencing special prosecution, and I kind of wanted to focus on that a little bit because, and I'm going to read a quote from the hearing because you make reference to a 1975 county code, which was, I think without dispute, not offered to the trial court. There's a letter referencing it, but it was not referenced. And you spend a fair amount of time on your brief regarding that code. And you were, I think this was early on in the hearing, and your statement to the judge was, "Your Honor, I will stipulate that existing case law is exactly what Mr. Stokes has indicated, is that the county attorney, they have to prosecute items that would have occurred under the county code, but that if a township passes more restrictive ordinances and they decide to do that, the county attorney won't have to prosecute and typically doesn't." I'm assuming that is the reason that you did not prosecute the matter under a county code, and no county code was in fact offered. And so basically there was no dispute, as I understand it, that it was the non-conforming use occurred when a subsequent township ordinance prohibited it. That's what the court found. What error of law, if any, would be in any of those findings, or at least can you, would you agree with me that by that statement, you were telling the judge, we're not prosecuting this under any county code?
Well, in the relevant time period, which is 2018, okay, at least for citing somebody, when he was cited in 2019, it was based upon the then existing code that was in place. And the only time that prior year's codes or what, you know, these ordinance cases, if you have something and somebody says, well, 10 years ago, this was okay to do, it's the state's contention that it's incumbent on the defendant to say, well, here's a copy of the code back then that says this was okay. I could have done this. And the county code, the reason that we cited to it is back in 1975. And, you know, the defendant comes in and says, I had a trucking business back to 1977. But they don't say, oh, and by the way, that was legal back then. They just.
But Mr. Olson, isn't it the state's burden of proof to show that a non-conforming use is illegal, meaning under the law, it's the state's criminal complaint? Wouldn't the state have to prove first that in 1977 it was a non-conforming use? And that's the point, as I understand, of that statement you made to the court, is that the issues prosecuted were whether the conforming use were later abandoned and or expanded, which would take it from a legal non-conforming to an illegal non-conforming.
Your Honor, at the time of the hearing and when we had that discussion, that was before Mr. Cordes testified, and we had discussed at the time that the hearing, as I went into that hearing, when I had that discussion with Judge Hoffman and Mr. Stokes was there, it was right now, for all relevant time that I was aware of from 1992 forward, he had very little going on that property. He had a small sod business, couple trucks a week going out of there. And he had in the 2010s, he'd started a little landscape supply business that was very little truck traffic out of there. So when those comments were in the context of that, then subsequent to that, Mr. Cordes testified that, oh, I had this big business going back then. from 1977 to 1990. And then he said, but I dissolved that in 1990. It was an excavating company. So from my perspective, as the time those comments were made, we were talking about a small sod business that had a couple of deliveries a week in the summer. You know, that's when sod grows. And then also a little bit of landscape supply business that was very small. And so the prior use had been discontinued. And that's part of our argument. But I don't know if I've answered your question about, am I prosecuting the county code? I'm prosecuting what's occurring now. It's my contention, the state's contention, that if the defendant wants to avail themselves of a grandfather defense, that's what we all call it, he's grandfathered in, the defendant has to show that, hey, this was legal at the time that I was doing it. This is not a, I never discontinued it. And so what defense counsel did, kind of crafty, is said, the state didn't offer evidence to disprove a defense that we never offered evidence of. So I felt like it was an improper burden shift. And I researched some on that. I didn't find a particular case on point, but after I received their responsive brief, it does, I believe that it's the party seeking to continue a non-conforming use that has the burden on that. And the citation for that would be in the decision in Northgate Homes versus City of Dayton. It's a District Court of Minnesota decision at 126 F3D 1095, 1100. That's the internal citation. So, but I believe that it was the defendant's obligation to put in proof of that. Otherwise, every time we have an ordinance violation, it would be incumbent on the state to go back and say, well, how long have they been here? They have junk outside their home. Was this okay to do 20 years ago? And then the state would have to come in and provide evidence of every version of the ordinance since that time. I don't believe that's the law. And I think the burden on the state, that would be an improper burden to place on the state. I think it's the defendant's burden to do that. That the defendant, if they want to say, boy, here's the code, back then it was okay to do this, that's a different story. And quite frankly, we wouldn't be here. But the
Mr. Olson, yeah. Yes. I'd like to follow up if I could on that point. Yes. So let's just assume you've got the law right there. You know, just for the sake of argument, we can hear from Mr. Stokes later. Yep. And that it was their burden. I think, though, I've got a problem in your case because one of your witnesses is Ms. Higgins, right, who testified about this particular property. And as I understand her testimony, but I could be wrong, so you can help me out. She testified that the concern of the township was the expansion of the commercial trucking and the perhaps discontinuance or abandonment by Mr. Cordes, but mostly expansion. That's what she talked about. And that she recognized and the township recognized that Mr. Cordes' use of the property was a permitted non-conforming use. So given that testimony, I don't see how your analysis about Mr. Cordes' burden of proof even makes sense because it wasn't the contested issue. The contested issue by the township in this particular case had to do with expansion or discontinuance abandonment, but based on Higgins' testimony, it was about expansion.
Well, and I'd like to refer the court to document ID 17 and the contested omnibus hearing exhibit 3, and that's the township's denial. And they go on and they indicate that they, had these hearings and they made findings that supported what they felt was denial of the rezoning. And on the last page of that, the township says the application to rezone, they're denied and the CUP is denied. But then it's the third finding, and I'm on page 6 of that, says the decisions of the town board on the present application do not affect the right of the owner to continue to operate the landscaping business on the property as a non-conforming use. provided that use is not expanded in violation of state law or the development code. So when Ms. Higgins, my understanding of her testimony was, we're not here because he's had this small little side business that's going on. We don't even care about that. What's the concern is that all of a sudden you have this business that for at least 28 years and it has been operating at a very low level of truck traffic. And then one day they come in and they apply for a zoning change because they, you know, the buyer said, I'm not buying that property. I want the zoning change and a CUP to be able to do this activity. And they, when they applied, and so the township said, no, you can't do the new stuff, this new business, which is totally different. It's a new business, but we're not trying to shut down what you've been doing, this sleepy little business. I don't know if that, and then at the hearing, Mr. Cordes testified that, oh, I had this real active business back in the 70s and 80s, but then he even acknowledged, I dissolved it. I closed that business. And then if you read his testimony, and then I'm getting older and I had some back problems and I have now, you know, essentially there was very little truck traffic at the time. So that those are questions that should have been for the jury to consider. There was documentary evidence and there was also witness testimony that this had been pretty much abandoned, the use, very little sod, very little landscape, you know, couple trucks a week. And all of a sudden to wake up in the one morning and find out there's 10 trucks running at 5:30 a.m. outside your house and you're the neighbor across the street, Mr. Suhani, it's quite a jolt. And so those are issues that the jury should have considered. I see that my time ran out and I'm trying to be respectful of that.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. And of course, you'll have 5 minutes of rebuttal if you choose. And so we will turn it to counsel for a respondent. As soon as you're ready, you identify yourself and you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Sean, S-E-A-N, Patrick, P-A-T-R-I-C-K, Stokes, S-T-O-K-E-S. And I am counsel for a respondent, Kenneth Cordes. Your Honors, the first issue that I think the court needs to address is the propriety of appellant submitting the 1975 Washington County zoning ordinance in their addendum to their brief. As is noted in appellant's objection, that was improper pursuant to Minnesota Rule of Appellate Procedure 110.01, which states that the record on appeal consists of the documents filed in the district court, offered exhibits, and transcripts, if any. There can be no doubt that the 1975 ordinance was not offered at the contested omnibus hearing, was not filed with the district court ever. And the mere fact that a letter from the town's council makes reference to that ordinance does not make it part of the record.
Council, I have a question for you related to that. The ordinance is a legislative enactment. It is not a, and therefore it's not a document that is created by an individual. It's a document created by the township board. So how does it differ from a statute, which I think you would agree that this court can cite to an older version of a statute without that statute being admitted into the record in the district court proceeding? Why does this legislative document have to be admitted into the record in order for this court to consider it on appeal?
Because the state stipulated on the record at the hearing that they were not relying on a county ordinance that was in effect in 1977, and furthermore stipulated that the contested use in fact qualified as a protected prior nonconforming use, and that the sole issue before the court was whether that use had been abandoned and recommenced or had been expanded. So
I agree with you, there's an issue about whether that argument was made before the district court. And if it wasn't made, you have a good argument that it shouldn't be considered by this court. But I guess that's where I'm thinking maybe your focus should be rather than on whether the document should be stricken from the record.
Fair enough, Your Honor. Moving on, I would like to note that the appellant's appeal is improper in that a district court decision to dismiss a criminal complaint for lack of probable cause, which is made based upon the facts, is not appealable.
Mr. Stokes, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but sure. You had made a statement in response to Judge Cochran's question that I wanted to follow up. You made reference to stipulation. Now, I did read a quote to Mr. Olson in which the phrase was used, stipulate, I will stipulate, although that seemed to be referencing who could prosecute a violation of a county code. And I think from that stipulation, it really was more of an agreement that we could not prosecute a county code. At least that's how I read that quote. But you seem to be in your brief and a number of times using the phrase stipulation that it was a legal use of that property in 1977. I didn't see in the record, can you point to, was there either an agreement made written form that I didn't see in the record, or was there an actual stipulation offered by the attorneys to the judge in the hearing?
Your Honor, I don't have the citation to the transcript immediately available in front of me, but I'm quite certain that what happened is before we went on the record, before the district court, Mr. Olson and I had this conversation because it's always been an open question whether the town's theory here is that the commercial use was always prohibited, period, or whether it was permitted, but now has expanded and it was permitted as a pre-existing non-conforming use, but now has expanded or at some point was interrupted and therefore is no longer protected. And if you look at the record, you'll see the town taking different positions on that question more than one time. And as the court just pointed out in questioning Mr. Olson, Ms. Higgins herself acknowledges that the town had agreed or had taken the position that Mr. Cordes was protected as a prior nonconforming use with respect to his commercial landscape company and in his sod farm. So what I needed to know in order to properly present my case was what is your position here? And Mr. Olson agreed that for purposes of this hearing, that the state would stipulate that the use was a prior nonconforming use and that the sole issue was whether it had expanded or terminated. Now, I stated that to the court during the hearing, that the state had conceded for purposes of this hearing that the commercial use was protected as pre-existing nonconforming. And therefore, the issue before the court was, did it expand or had it been terminated and restarted? And you'll note, I'm sure, that Judge Hoffman makes a specific finding in his order that the state in fact conceded to that position. So for them now to come back and try to argue that this was never a pre-existing non-conforming use is improper and unfair. You're Mr. muted, Your Honor.
Sorry about that. Mr. Olson made reference to it was your client's burden in this proceeding to demonstrate the legal use of the property dating back to 1977. You're shaking your head no. Did you want to respond to that?
I do. Thank you, Your Honor. Well, first of all, how could it be my client's burden to prove something that the state has stipulated to? I mean, I can't understand how that possibly could be the case. And secondly, I mean, the controlling law here is actually Florence. And what Florence says is that if the defendant provides testimony at the hearing that is credible and or if believed would be exonerating, there is a burden shift. Mr. Olson said, well, this feels like there was an improper burden shift and you know, clever acts by counsel here. No, the law is very clear on this point. In a probable cause hearing, if the defendant provides testimony that, if believable, would be exonerating, now the state has to provide substantial evidence admissible at trial that would be sufficient to overcome a motion for directed verdict of acquittal. So there is, in fact, a burden shift. Mr. Cordes did provide credible testimony that would exonerate him, that his use of the property never was unlawful. It was protected as a pre-existing use. And so at that point, the burden shifts to the state. And Mr. Cordes, by the way, testified that his use was never interrupted and that it had not been expanded. So the burden now shifts back to the state to provide substantial evidence to that would overcome the motion for directed verdict of acquittal at trial. Well, what evidence did they provide? Kathleen Higgins testified that she had no personal knowledge of Mr. Cordes' use of the property, that she was aware that there was a sod farm and that she had heard about different things. But she was very clear in testifying, I don't know what his use of the property was historically. So how could that testimony be relevant or be evidence that in fact the use terminated and recommenced, or that in fact the use had expanded? So the only evidence they actually offered on this question was Mr. Suhani's testimony. And quite frankly, the court found that it was not sufficient to cause a reasonable juror to be able to find reasonable doubt or not find reasonable doubt at trial. And the reality is the rules are very clear here. That was the basis for Judge Hoffman's ruling, was that the state did not provide substantial evidence that would have been sufficient to overcome motion for directed verdict of acquittal. That's a fact determination. He very clearly says, these are the facts that are in the record. This is what Mr. Cordes testified to. These are Mr. Cordes' property tax records. Here's a 2005 zoning map from the township saying that this is commercial property. And all the state has is Kathleen Higgins saying, well, we didn't like the fact that, you know, Mr. Zavarino applied for the CUP, and we sure as heck didn't want to, you know, have that type of use, so we denied it. Well, that's fine. What Mr. Zavarino applied for would have been an expansion. That's why he applied for it. He needed to apply for it because what he was asking for was considerably beyond what commercial use Mr. Cordes had done. So fine, the town says we're not going to approve it. They have the right to do that.
So Mr. Stokes, I'd like to just follow up for a minute. Instead of talking about the expansion, the request for a variance, to focus back on Mr. Cordes' testimony about his use of the property. Yeah. It seems to me that, you know, to your point, that is this really a Florence appeal or isn't it? One of the things that this court should look at is how the district court evaluated the evidence, what legal standard the court held the evidence to. I think that's right. Correct me if I'm wrong. And it seems to me the district court took kind of a long view of what Mr. Cordes's prior use was of the property, because Mr. Cordes's testimony kind of goes back and forth about how many trucks there were, and, you know, were there times where he was using very little trucking. But the district court said, you know, I'm not going to look at it based on this sort of piecemeal approach. I'm going to look at his, I think, was it a 40-year history of use of the property? Is that the right legal standard when I think what the state had to prove under the relevant statutes was 1 year of discontinued use. So is that the right legal standard?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I think that the legal standard, the correct legal standard, is not disputed. And that is that the trial court is to view the evidence in the light most favorable to the state. And I would submit that, you know, you're right, that the judge did recognize that, like any business, particularly a small business, there are ebbs and flows. And Mr. Cordes, I think, testified very credibly that depending on economic circumstances, health circumstances, sometimes his trucking business was more active than others.
But again, the problem is that the state just didn't offer any evidence that would rebut what Mr. Cortez said. And so the trial court was left with the evidence that it was left with. That was what was in the record. And I believe that the court correctly determined that based on that long window of time, that it, the fact that there were ebbs and flows in the business is not evidence that the business was discontinued for a year or more. There was no evidence whatsoever. Even Mr. Suhani didn't say that. And certainly Ms. Higgins did not say that. There is nothing in this record that would be evidence whatsoever that the trucking use ever terminated altogether. So the fact that it did ebb and flow doesn't mean it's no longer protected. And I get back to, is there even jurisdiction for this appeal? If the district court's ruling was made based on facts, then it's not appealable. And that's exactly what it was based on. He determined that Mr. Cortez had established that the property, in fact, was protected as prior existing use, therefore could not be criminally prosecuted, and that the state did not provide substantial evidence that would have been sufficient to overcome a motion for directed verdict of acquittal. The judge got this exactly
right. So, Mr. Stokes, just one more quick question. I see your time's lapsing, and maybe Judge Sleater will give you a little additional time. But here's what I'm wondering. So you're talking now about the Florence standard, but did the district court err in dismissing the state's complaint with prejudice? I don't see a basis for that in the law. It's not typical in a probable cause hearing.
I would say that is a fair question. I believe what the district court was intending to do was to recognize that the state should be stopped from simply turning around and filing a new complaint using a different offense date under the same theories and causes of action. Now, whether that's appropriately done by a dismissal with prejudice or not, I think is a fair question. But I think the idea here is the state's had their opportunity to litigate this, and they're litigating it in a parallel civil action. At what point is this just unfair to Mr. Cortez?
Counsel, I have a quick follow-up to that if Judge Sleater will
permit
me to ask the question. Would you agree that the question of whether the district court has the authority to dismiss the complaint with prejudice is a legal question?
Yes.
So even if we agree with you on your other arguments, we would have the authority to address that issue?
I think that's true, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Very well. And now, Mr. Olson, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Stokes initially addressed the appropriateness of putting the zoning ordinance in. The reason that the zoning ordinance wasn't put in prior to that, I had no basis to believe that the judge at the hearing, nobody had ever discussed what was the zoning back in 1975, other than the fact that it was agricultural property.
And Mr. Olson, can I inquire, though, getting back to the criminal nature, wouldn't it be the state's obligation to, before bringing in a criminal complaint, or at least on the face of the criminal complaint, probable cause would presume that it's now an illegal use, and so it would behoove the state to know the history, because the law is pretty clear that but for an expansion or the 1 year termination of an otherwise non-conforming use, it would be proper. And so it would be the state's burden if you're wishing to pursue criminal charges, which obviously the township was.
Your Honor, the burden that would put on the state is every time it prosecuted somebody for a violation of a zoning ordinance, the state would have to determine A, what's happening now? Does it violate the current ordinance? And B, boy, when did they buy this property? How far back did they buy this? Did they buy it in 1995 or when? And what was the state of the law back then? I've never done that before, prosecuted a number of ordinances violations. I mean, I don't know, dozens. And they never have had the discussion or on the probable cause stage when the judge is reviewing the complaint, I've never had anybody ever say, okay, this is 2020, but what was it like back in 95? I don't believe that the state has the burden of demonstrating that. And that's why, as I understand it, the grandfather use or the non-conforming use is a defense. And the
so then is the issue properly before us now, your argument that it was an illegal use in under the 1975 county code, if you didn't raise it before the district court, raise that argument before the district court?
The reason that it wasn't raised at the time, we had the exhibit that went in. My understanding was and Mr. Stokes talked about some conversation. I don't agree that the state ever stipulated that any prior use of this property, that my understanding, the use of the property walking into that hearing and the time we had any discussions was he had a small sod farm, very little traffic. He had a landscape business that really was hardly even operating, maybe once in a while, a shipment of stones or something. And that was when I said, we're not here to talk about that. We're not, you know, to the extent that that might be non-conforming. And the sod farm, probably agricultural, probably isn't non-conforming, but this landscape, there'd be an argument to be made. Let me just say, we're not here to talk about that, Mr. Stokes. I'm here to talk about what he's done to expand from that use. And then later we have during and so I did not, as I understood it, Mr. Stokes never argued that this was permitted back in 1977. And I didn't believe that it was the state's burden to provide all the statutes that applied. And
would you agree that this is a new argument that you're raising on appeal regarding the 1975 county code?
Well, to the extent that the judge made it an issue and Mr. Stokes put into his proposed findings and then the judge adopted it to say the state didn't meet its burden. Somehow the state didn't put in evidence of this, but there was evidence of it in that exhibit, contested omnibus exhibit 13. There was a letter from the Denmark Township civil attorney that took about a page and a half that went through and said, this, whatever, any trucking that was going on in the past, that wasn't permitted. So I'm in there and there's no discussion of this. Mr. Stokes never argued in his brief that, hey, back in 1977, this was okay. You could have a trucking business. The reason he didn't is because it wasn't permitted. I don't know if I think I ran out of time there. Is that the...
You did, but if you want to conclude your comment, you may do so.
Okay. And just the last thing, the dismissal with prejudice. To the extent, it's kind of a double bind that the trial judge did. Said, well, you should have put in evidence of this old ordinance. And I don't believe that statutes or ordinance are evidence, but you should have put it in. You should have brought it before me. But then when the judge in his order talks about it, says there's nothing in that ordinance that prohibits trucking, he's flat wrong. That's a finding. That's a legal finding. He's just absolutely wrong. And I cited the relevant portions in my brief. So to say we can't then refile based on the activity today, based on and put that in, I believe is an error. So I thank you, Your Honors.
Very well. Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your thoughtful answers to our questions today, as well as your briefing. It's an interesting issue. We look forward to considering it. We will take it under advisement and issue an opinion in the statutory time period. So you each have a good day.
Thank you, Your Honor.